All right, let's go to the phone line where we've got a traveling man over on the east coast of this United States. Just south of Boston, we've got Great American Mining, the CEO, Todd Garland. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Hey, I'm not doing too bad. I'm on my way to Bismarck, North Dakota, where Great American Mining has done some business with the Bitcoin mining. I know that up in the North Dakota region because of the temperature. So I thought it'd be a good time to get an update from Great American Mining. What's going on in the Bitcoin world? We like to check in at least quarterly with Great American Mining to find out, number one, what's going on in the world of Bitcoin and energy, and number two, to find out if there's any advancements south of the Mason-Dixon line for outfits like this to go in and be cost prohibitive, because once you get south of the Mason-Dixon line down into Texas, historically, there's been some temperature problems. So, yes, Bismarck, North Dakota. So have you spent any time in Bismarck?
Yeah, last time I was up that way was back in November, a few weeks before Thanksgiving, doing a deployment up near Arnegard, North Dakota.
Sure, Arnegard. Spent a week there one night, yeah. So how was your Bismarck Bakken trip as far as Arnegard? And when you say in doing some business, I assume you mean Bitcoin?
Yeah, so that particular trip, we were deploying three new containers up that way. And, I mean, the trip was fabulous. I really, really liked the area. And I especially like it when it's not, like negative 25. So it was a good time to visit. We've been doing some more deployments up that way through December and now January, which have been absolutely brutal. So, in terms of Bitcoin mining and deploying in the winter, we're definitely learning some hard lessons this year.
It's interesting, too, because I mentioned the south of the Mason-Dixon line, temperature seems to become more of an issue. Here on the flip side, the temperature being so cold is an issue on the installation. But how is the temperature issues when it comes to some of this Bitcoin mining, putting those big units next to a well site to help them, get some advancements with emission management and also with some of their Bitcoin mining, et cetera. How is the old temperature range these days?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the cold temperatures are good, for mining in general, because one of the biggest challenges is with the density of the container. So the amount of, hot air that gets packed into that container because there's so many computers in there, we have to figure out how to get rid of that hot air so that the computers can operate at their normal operating temperature. So the cold air is good, but I guess on the flip side, you take folks like us who are, used to mining Bitcoin, and, we might not know the oil and gas business as well. We're learning some lessons around, heat trace insulation and all that good stuff up there this year. So I guess I'd say the cold weather is good up until a point. You got to be prepared for that as well.
Well, I know we've had talks in the past. There's been some, Wyoming has popped up, even some other. Texas has always been a difficult spot to get a foothold in the past. Have you guys have any other places that you care to mention where you're starting to see some success outside of the Bakken?
Yeah, so I mean, even outside of our company, Great American Mining, there are other companies currently operating in Texas and doing well. And not all of them are using immersion. So they're dealing with the heat fine with air-cooled setups. Kind of the word on the street is that the containers are less dense, or they're using older miners, older computers, where they didn't need to move as much air to stay cool. So there are ways that you can make air cooling work. It's still tricky, but right now for us, our focus is on immersion, and we're working on a couple deals down there right now to get our first containers done in West Texas.
Well, that's exciting. I know it's been, you guys have had, like everybody else, challenges. And you mentioned some of the outfits that are already down there, but they've had challenges, and they still do because of temperatures and all these different things. So it's an exciting time that the operators are trying new things. That's the part that I am loving in this whole energy transition is some of the entrepreneurs and diehards like yourself, you know, these crazy, smart, clever capitalists who spend their time sleeping at well sites, checking monitors, checking levels. I can't tell you how many just awesomely insane capitalists, entrepreneur inventors I've met because of this methane emission, from people like yourself to people converted it into liquid gas right on site to all kinds of different things. That's the part I'm really enjoying about this. Talk to me like I'm an operator for a second. Talk to me like you've got, you know, Harold Hamm in the office right now, and you want to sit him down and explain to these operators why your technology is something they should consider. If not, you know, if not you, another Bitcoin mining, fine. But let's get people thinking about this next step, which is attaching some of these technologies to get to that next chapter and know that it is going to work out. How do you reach some of these operators and some of these oil companies who are going through the growing pains?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the challenges is, traditionally it seems as though producers outsource like collection of and monetization of byproducts. So like, for example, NGLs. And I think many of them look at this being similar. It's like, oh, there's this technology that can get rid of this nuisance gas for me and help me solve a problem. But I don't really like want to deal with having to learn or own that infrastructure myself. And I think that's totally normal. You take, someone who is, producing barrels of oil. The leap from that to managing a mobile data center to mine Bitcoin is pretty big, especially because the space is just so, it's in its infancy. It's so new. I think what we'll see happen, however, is as Bitcoin is more accepted, more widely accepted, which I think we're in that phase right now of adoption. You're seeing, a lot of, I would just say institutional money, come into the space. And so I think establishing that foundation, I think will give producers maybe a little bit more curiosity to figure out how this could actually help them transform their business. I wholeheartedly believe the fact of the matter is the first oil company that integrates mining Bitcoin alongside their normal operations is going to, transform their business. And that's not my like snake oil salesman way of trying to get someone to mine, mine Bitcoin. I just think it makes way too much sense not to.
Well, I'll take it away from you then and say you gave me a great transition, because I did want to ask you about the NFTs and some of these next gen when it comes to digital currency. Is this where we're going to eventually go to other digital currencies? Is that one of the reasons why? And it may not be NFTs. You can comment on that. But is that one of the reasons why you're being direct with the operators that, listen, this is only the beginning here?
Well, I mean, there are some people out there who believe that you can do more, quote unquote, advanced computer processing. I personally believe we're still a long way away from that. I view Bitcoin as being that base layer, the least amount of friction, best way to monetize stranded energy, hands down. I don't think you necessarily need the hope or promise of there being something else beyond that or in addition to that. I think Bitcoin is actually the perfect solution for operators who have excess gas or stranded gas, or who don't even want to bother connecting to the pipeline and waiting 12, 24 months or whatever to make that happen. They can just monetize it right there on site.
Yeah. I see where a lot of this is going to, and I thought from the beginning, when I heard about some of the innovations happening with Great American Mining and this Bitcoin emission management strategy, I really thought it was the next step. And I say that for a lot of different reasons. I mean, once you start understanding how the blockchain works, you see how this is going to become automatic for people and how it's going to have its own economy. The oil and gas industry will have its own economy like a country, as soon as the digital currency and blockchain gets underway. I really believe, and people won't even understand it. It'll just happen.
Yeah.
It'll just happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the, you know, oil and gas is a capital intensive business. Mining Bitcoin is a capital intensive business. So there are a lot of similarities. And I think the first few, you know, producers that really figure this out are going to control their destiny. I think the rest are, you know, going to continue to be challenged by all the, you know, ESG initiatives and kind of clamping down on them, you know, building their business.
I just see where the end goal of, you know, the digital currency and the blockchain and et cetera, it takes so much uncertainty out of business. Because it guarantees payments, it guarantees collections, and a lot of these different things that are problematic for a lot of businesses. It hinders the smaller guys, at least, and the mid-sized people a lot. That was very noticeable during COVID, who got money first, who got money second, et cetera, et cetera. Before we lose too many listeners by getting too deep into the blockchain digital currency here, because I just wanted to just prod it a little bit so a few of the people listening can see where this is probably going to go or where it's been pushing. Where do you see it going in, say, next year? Where do you think we'll be next year? Do you think there will be more in Texas? Do you think some of these stripper wells that are undergoing major regulations, do you see them putting something like that, or is it just too cost prohibitive right now for some of the independents? Just, you know, put on your soothsayer hat a little bit with the digital currency and the Bitcoin mining. Where are you guys going, or where do you see the industry going over the next year?
Yeah, so I mean, I think what the industry really needs is an outfit like ourselves or one of our other, you know, honestly, I don't even think these guys as competitors. Like, we're all trying to push forward a very similar agenda. I think you need someone like us who has experience, who has gone through multiple years of, you know, summer, winter, and various climates, who can properly manage these data centers for an operator, start to provide some way for them to lease or finance these from us so they can get their feet wet. I think it's a really tough sell when you take, you know, let's say one of our containers that fits roughly 150 machines. Once you get that fully worked up, I mean, you're talking like $1.4 million, and that's only going to solve about 120 MCF for the producer. The reality is that a lot of producers, for this to be useful for them, are going to need like 100 of these things. So, you know, I think companies like ours need to get to the point where we can just lease these out, and producers can then kind of limp in with less capital committed up front to get a feel for how this works, get a feel for, you know, the instant daily clearing of cash. You know, I'm assuming producers aren't going to want to keep the Bitcoin on their balance sheet. I think that's like a second step. But the first step of just like experiencing, you know, backing one of our trailers up to the site, connecting the generators, turning everything on, and then all of a sudden, within 24 hours, you're starting to see effectively like streaming money. I think that's really powerful. Especially as these producers, you know, manage cash flow and all the other intricacies of their business. I think this can be integral to how they operate, ultimately, how they monetize their gas.
When I think of the Bitcoin mining happening in the United States right now, I think of the Bakken, I think of Wyoming, yep. I think of Colorado, and I think of some in Texas, not much, but some. And in fact, yep. Texas, I look at as a little bit more experimental at this time. No offense to the Texas people. No offense. Good job. But I still think that there's too many variables right now to really call that a solid market. Again, I could be wrong. How is the East Coast? You know, when I think of the Marcellus, that's just natural gas city, baby. Is there anybody up in the East Coast? You live up at the East Coast. Hess is up at the East Coast. You know, I mean, Susquehanna, the county's in the East Coast.
Yeah. So we had an install in Pennsylvania, you know, and the gas was great. We loved it. You know, unfortunately we just had a, you know, an operator who had only a handful of wells that was a little crazy. So we moved those up to North Dakota, but I mean, I would definitely go back there. If we had a good setup, I think another one of the challenges is there's just less, from what we've found so far, there's less stranded gas there. Mm-hmm. And I think the mindset is also a little different where, if, for a a mineral owner, they'd almost rather keep it in the ground than sell it for what it might actually be worth today. You know, they're longer on their kind of core asset versus in the Bakken. I think it's a little bit different. It's like more of a nuisance in many cases.
Well, and down in Texas too, and in other places, yep. Emission management's under fire. So this is a great way to keep the, you know, keep the state inspector boogeyman off your back for a while. Just a couple more questions here. I did want to ask you about the difference between wet gas and dry gas, if that is even an issue. I bring that up because, of course, the Bakken's got that wet gas that everybody wants. Then you go down to Texas and there's dry gas. So it's a totally different play. Does that matter to you guys at all?
No, I mean, the only thing that really matters is when it gets too expensive to treat the gas. So like if there's a lot of H2S, you know, that can get expensive for our model. But no, I mean, wet versus dry, like in Pennsylvania, it was relatively dry and it worked just fine.
Okay.
We just end up kind of placing a different, different requirements for the generators, basically. Mm-hmm.
And now this, I don't even know if you can answer legally or ethically or what the deal is on it, but you brought up mineral owners, and that's always one that I'm very curious about, because really at the end of the day, we try to stick up for the mineral owners, you know, because they're the people, and the, you know, the oil companies are the people and all that stuff. And a lot of these states or counties or both, when the gas is flared or sent off, they don't get paid. And I try to put myself in the mineral owner's shoes. I'd be like, I don't care what you do with that. Pay me. Hey, man, the minute that comes out of the ground, you owe me. So, and I get that's not the case, and I'd probably concede if I sat in the room too. But secondly, just what does that mean in the world of Bitcoin? Do the mineral owners get Bitcoin, or do they split it up, or no? Or I guess I didn't even think of the mineral owners at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, right now we're not actually working with any producers where they are participating at that, in the sense that like they're earning a share of the Bitcoin we're mining. We're effectively negotiating contracts where we pay them a fixed amount for that gas. So in that situation, the mineral rights owners are getting paid, you know, it's obviously not what they'd make through a pipeline, but at the same time, you don't have to bring a pipeline there to monetize that gas. So it's like you're kind of providing like an on-demand way to monetize the gas while also solving the emissions issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it is better than flaring for mineral rights owners, hands down.
Well, what I just heard is that you guys customize it to make it work for everybody. Well, that's a good thing. Okay. Well, if somebody's listening, they want to know more information, what's the best way that they can engage with you, get in touch with you, find out how to get somebody out at their site?
Yeah, sure thing. So just Todd, T-O-D-D, at GAM, G-A-M dot A-I, or just go to GAM.AI on the internet, and there's a contact us form there as well.
All right. Anything we left out? Anything we want to make sure we get out there?
No, I think that was it. I appreciate your time, Jason, and everyone listening.